Hello and welcome. Tonight we're going to do one of the most famous cases in American history. It's Dartmouth College v. Woodward. Dartmouth College is a small liberal arts college in New Hampshire. William Woodward was a member of its board of trustees. And this case goes back to the early 1800s. It was decided in 1819. And the decision was written by none other than John Marshall, who was really one of the greatest chief justices in the history of the United States. And as you may remember, John Marshall was also the author of the opinion in Marbury versus Madison. He is uniformly regarded as one of the brightest legal minds in American history. It also was argued by Daniel Webster, who became a United States Senator from the state of Massachusetts, was known as one of the greatest orators in American history. And Daniel Webster argued the case and became known as one of the greatest constitutional lawyers as a result of his arguments that prevailed here. What was this case and what happened? Well, in 1769, the King of England wanted to charter universities all over the United States, and he gave a charter to trustees then of Dartmouth College in northern New Hampshire, and to start and found a college in the tradition of other colleges that were formed in the United States, like Harvard, to be able to create this independent school whereby subjects in the United States, which were then the colonies of Great Britain, would become educated gentlemen and ladies, although no ladies went at that time. They would eventually go and would eventually confer degrees to everybody. But in 1769, it was just getting off the drawing board, and the King of England then, who was none other than the infamous King George, who was king during the American Revolution, granted this charter to Dartmouth College. And the charter allowed for the establishment of this college in New Hampshire. The document spelled out the purpose of the school, set up the structure to govern it under a board of trustees, gave land to the college. There was a land grant given by the king, and it was thereupon established. Now, over 50 years later, in 1816, after the Revolution, the state legislature of the state of New Hampshire passed a law which revised that charter, passed a state statute saying that this school was now a property of the state of New Hampshire and that it was a public college. It was their intent to make it a state university. And they changed the duties of the boards of trustees. They would get to appoint the board of trustees as opposed to the mechanism that was contained within the original charter. And they changed how the trustees, of course, thereupon were selected, whereas they weren't elected from within the procedures set out in the original royal charter. They would be elected pursuant to this new statute. Well, the existing trustees didn't like that. They wanted to keep the college the way it was. They wanted to keep it private. They wanted to operate under the charter they've been operating under for 50 years. They had built a very prominent school that was very well respected, and they were worried that if it was taken over by the state of New Hampshire, its admission practices, its quality would be diminished. So the trustees filed suit against the state of New Hampshire, against the college, which had been taken over by statute. And what they argued was that Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution prevented a state from impairing, that means weakening or changing, an existing contract. Contracts are sacrosanct under the United States Constitution. Governments can't pass a law that impairs an existing contract. Well, Daniel Webster argued this case and said it cannot impair that. What was decided by the Supreme Court? And back then, the Supreme Court, by the way, had 6 members. It was later changed to 9, but in 1819, it had 6. And by a 5-1 margin, so it was overwhelming of all the justices, the court disagreed with Dartmouth College and hence the state of New Hampshire. It struck down the law as unconstitutional. And it said that Dartmouth could continue as a private college. Chief Justice Marshall wrote the majority opinion. He said that the charter was, in essence, a contract between the king and the trustees of the college that were established. And even though there were no longer a royal colony, they are now a state, and we had fought a revolution, the contract is still valid because the Constitution says that a state cannot pass a law to impair the contract, and because common law, the laws of England, were carried through to the new United States. More specifically, Marshall stated the following, because this charter created a corporation. This charter incorporated Dartmouth College. So in opining on this decision about the inability to impair a contract and that common law of England carries over, he further said, a corporation is an artificial being, invisible, intangible, and existing only in the contemplation of law. Being the mere creature of law, it possesses only those properties which the charter of its creation confers upon it, either expressly or as incidental to its very existence. These are such as are supposed best calculated to the effect, the object for which it was created, meaning the college. Among most, the most important are immortality. That means it's got a perpetual existence. The state could not terminate the existence of the contract. The state could not terminate the duration of the corporation. It was immortal. It was perpetual. And if the expression may be allowed, individually, properties by which our perpetual succession of many persons are considered as the same and may act as a single individual. That means a corporation acts through its board as a individual, separate, artificial person under the law. This case establishes in the United States the concept that a corporation is an artificial person under the law. That theory had been in existence since Roman times. It was not a new theory. But Marshall uses this case to enunciate that for the entire United States. He said that the federal constitution recognizes not only this right of contract, but also the individual corporate personhood of every corporation established before and after the revolution. He further goes on to state that these rules, which he just enunciated, about corporate personhood, enable a corporation to manage its own affairs and to hold property without the perplexing intricacies and the hazardous and endless necessity of perpetual conveyances for the purposes of transmitting it from hand to hand. What that means is that once this corporation existence is established, it doesn't have to hand it down after the revolution. The common law says that legal entities before the revolution are legal entities after it. That this corporation, which was perfectly legal before the revolution, was chartered under the laws. It was recognized under common law. The charter was valid. It was given to the trustees of Dartmouth College. It is a contract. It cannot be violated by the state of New Hampshire. Can't be canceled. Now, could the Board of Trustees have dissolved the corporation? Yeah, they could have, but they didn't want to. And indeed, William Woodward, the head of the Board of Trustees, was the guy who sued to keep it as a private college. Historians believe that this decision greatly encouraged business investment and growth because it concretized in law that principle which had been existing since Roman times, that a corporation is a separate, distinct, artificial person under the law with its own personage, and that that corporation cannot be dissolved except by its shareholders and directors. The shareholders and directors of the corporation did not want to dissolve it. It was dissolved by a statute passed by the New Hampshire State Legislature. The Supreme Court of the United States said they didn't have the legal authority to do that. Corporations are chartered today by states pursuant to general incorporation laws, but back then they were chartered by kings. And the fact that the king was thrown out with a revolution didn't mean he didn't have the legal authority to charter the corporation before then. And what Marshall understood was, if you throw out all the old English law, chaos results, because all the contracts, all the relationships, all the corporations that started before them would then be in peril. He didn't want to do that. He wanted certainty. He wanted a transition of law from England to the United States. By recognizing the charter as legally valid before the United States and saying that common law slid into the laws of the United States except where inconsistent with the Constitution, he upheld this charter. And the Constitution specifically speaks to it. And he quotes that, saying you cannot change charters or contracts. That if they were good then, they're good now. States can't pass laws to impair those corporate charters. Businesses are thus more secure. And the financial markets then, and even more today, love security. They hate change. And this security allowed corporations to grow, to prosper, and more importantly, to attract investors and capital, and to employ more and more workers to add to the national's prosperity. This is a very important case because it allowed for corporate stability. It allowed and recognized corporate permanence. If Marshall had come down on the other side and allowed a state to just vaporize a corporation that it did not form, be one thing if the state chartered it. There's an argument that they could take away that charter that they gave, but that wasn't the case. This was a valid charter before the state was a state. And as a result, the court said that contract, that charter continues. It gave stability and it gave states all a pause that they could not disrupt contracts. It helped corporations be recognized as perpetual permanent entities. That allows for the attraction of investment. That allows for strengthening of contracts. That allows for better corporate personhood. See you next week.